Most of us have experienced grief over the loss of a loved one, and coping with that grief can sometimes seem overwhelming. We'll discuss grieving this hour and how we can cope or help others cope and what we can learn from loss. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We'll talk with a guest author who lost her husband of 40 years in 2008. We'll hear about her emotional journey, the lessons she's learned from both her experience and the lessons of the people she's counseled in the years since. Have you lost a loved one recently or even a long time ago? What helped you deal with the grief? Do you use ritual? Or do you involve other people? What questions or experiences would you like to share? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Elaine Mansfield. She facilitates bereavement support groups for people who have lost spouses or partners in Ithaca, New York. She is the author of Leaning Into Love, A Spiritual Journey Through Grief, which describes her own grief at the loss of her husband to lymphoma in 2008. Elaine also gave recently a TEDx talk, Good Grief, What I Learned from Loss. And we have posted that video on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Good morning, Elaine.
Good morning. So nice of you to invite me.
Well, it's very nice to have you with us. You know, I've lost my parents, and I've lost siblings, three brothers.
Wow, that's a lot.
I've lost friends, some close friends too, but I have not lost a partner or a husband. I'm imagining that can be an even more difficult loss.
Well, it feels like all losses are difficult in their own ways, and I have never lost a child. I always think that must be the hardest of all.
Yeah.
But certainly my life was on track with my husband's life, and he was extremely healthy guy, and very vital. So am I. So was I. And so, you have these, his mother, as a matter of fact, is still alive, and she's 99. So we had this sense of his stability, and then cancer hits, and kind of everything is knocked out from under you, and you understand how tenuous everything is. So it was a big change in what I thought my life would be and how I thought what I thought we would do in our older ages together, but those times never came. So then you have to recreate life in a new way.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about the story of the loss of your husband and what that was like for you. Start from the beginning when at first your husband was just experiencing some flu symptoms.
He seemed to have, he was a professor, and so he was around students a lot, and he just seemed to have a flu that wouldn't go away. And then it kind of got better and got worse, and it changed a lot. But finally, he started having other symptoms like swelling. But it took many months for doctors to figure out what was going on. And so that was one of my first, learning experiences. You sort of think when you're ill and you go to a doctor, they're going to be able to tell you at least what's going on. And that wasn't the case. So it took a long time. And then when they did diagnose him, it was incurable and something they really didn't know how to treat, even in the best cancer centers, because it was so rare and no risk factors, just sort of a genetic mix-up, they figured.
Yeah.
And so so we went through a couple of years of trial and error and, trying to figure out ways to deal with symptoms, and then eventually the cancer just was stronger than he was. But he was an extremely strong physical person, and so it was quite interesting to watch, interesting and sad to watch the body just sort of folding in, and you never knew if it was the disease or the treatment. Both are hard.
Yeah. And what was the most difficult thing for you to process about his loss?
Well, we had a very close relationship since 1966, and I was used to kind of bouncing my life off him. And we still did that while he was ill. There was an awful lot. I always say that he was still like giving me hugs and patting me with great affection just within a few days of his death. So as when he was alive, we were grieving, but we were grieving together. And so then when he was gone, I had never lived alone in my life. I had been, you know, I'd been off to college and done all kinds, but I met him when I was a senior in college. So, I felt like an independent person in many ways, but I also had never lived alone for any period of time. So that was something that I took on wholeheartedly. I told my sons right away, you know, go ahead, go back to your homes. It's okay, because I have to learn to do this. But I needed to learn to live alone, and I needed to learn to keep my own counsel and not always be bouncing something off another person.
Yeah. You know, I love the part where your sons helped you plant a garden after the death of your husband.
Yeah. We always had a big garden. I live in the country, and I still do, which is kind of crazy, but I love the land, and I get a huge amount of support from being on the land. And so we always had a big vegetable garden, so I sort of had plants ready. Because my husband people can be sick forever, but then when they actually die, it's always kind of surprising. You say, oh, now? and so we had a very rough couple of weeks and then a very peaceful death. And I had all these plants, and my friends were taking care of them, and my sons just started, they said, okay, we're going to plant the garden. And I said, wait, who's going to eat all this food? And they said, it's a great summer to give food away. And it was.
Yeah.
It really was. So I grew quite a big garden that first year. Very, very comforting.
Your grief is not over, is it?
Say that again?
Your grief. You still continue to grieve?
When I wake up in the morning, I'm not thinking about Vic the very first thing, or it's not at all the same kind of intensity, but it's still there. I feel him very inwardly, and I feel a strong sense of him. But when I start talking about some of those experiences when grief was so raw, it's very easy for me to feel the emotions of that still. It's not something I circle around anymore, but because of the book, it comes up a lot in my life, and the emotions are still there. And I don't try to suppress them or push them away or repress them. I just let it be.
Yeah. The title of the
book. I think it's normal to be sad when people we love die, and we're a little bit. We're all a little afraid to show that. So,
yeah, in your TED Talk, you talk about how we run away from grief, and you say we should run toward it. That we should, embrace grief.
I think that there's a lot to be learned. One thing we're all impermanent. We're all mortal, and we can read that in various religious traditions, but when you're actually grieving for someone close, you know your own tenuous position on the earth, and I found because my mother spent years and years running from grief, and really I found that such a destructive approach. My father died when I was 14. And her running from grief was so destructive to our family, because we were all so sad, and we couldn't really talk about anything, and we couldn't share the sadness or keep the feeling of love for my dad alive. And I didn't want that to happen to my family, so it hasn't. We all readily and easily talk about my husband and express how we miss him, and we're all doing great too. So.
What role has ritual played in helping you deal with grief?
Well, I, I've been involved in ritual because I was one of those kids in the 60s who got involved with Eastern religion things. And I've always known for a long time, I was very drawn to the ritual in the Catholic Church, even when I was a kid, even though I was brought up Protestant. But I just naturally started falling into quite a few rituals when Vic got ill. I think it's part of that sense of you're really not in control of the situation. And a lot of the times we go through life pretending we're in control when we're really not. But when you and someone has cancer therapy and you're sitting in a chemotherapy room, you know you're not in control. And you have to find a way to live through the experience and actually have the experience be bearable. And for us, watching television and watching CNN and seeing, you know, the scary news of the world was not the way. But for us, the way to do it was to try to have a ritual, a meditation ritual, to accept the chemotherapy as something healing. And so to try to, you know, change our attitude, even if we couldn't change the physical outcome. So then throughout, after he died, two things just kept showing up for me, and ritual became more and more important. Just small things like walking to the place where his ashes are buried on the land and taking a flower there that summer after he died. Those very small things, I found that they made me feel better, so I kept doing them.
Mm-hmm. When you first learned of Vic's cancer, he wanted to keep it secret for a while, and you said, I can't do that. Talk yeah. some about involving others in your grief.
Well, I think the natural thing for him and for me, for most of us, is the kind of, you want, when I look back, I think it's a little bit of denial on his part, but also they couldn't diagnose what was going on with him. And I think the tendency is not to want to scare people or make a big deal out of something when you don't really know what's going on. But it was pretty clear he had cancer, and I didn't want to not tell my kids, because that's what my parents did. And I think that's what most people did in the 50s and 60s. They kind of kept it quiet. And then everybody knows something's wrong. They can feel something's wrong, but they don't know what it is. So I immediately wanted to involve our kids, and he agreed with me. It was just his natural response, I think, to say, let's not tell anybody until we're sure something's really problematic here. And I said, no, I don't want to do it alone. And then we immediately drove into the parking lot of a health food store in town after going to this doctor's appointment and being told that he almost surely had cancer. And I saw a very good friend there. And in the parking lot, I told this friend and her husband, we told them what was going on. And we got these very nourishing hugs, and we all cried together. And it was sweet, you know. And I felt like this is the right choice. And then, you know, we called our kids right away, and we kind of gathered the wagons around ourselves.
We will continue talking about grief and how we can learn from grief. And we're welcoming any questions or experiences you have. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our guest is Elaine Mansfield. She is the author of Leaning Into Love, A Spiritual Journey Through Grief, which describes her grief at the loss of her husband of 40 years to lymphoma in 2008. Elaine facilitates bereavement support groups for people who have lost spouses or partners in Ithaca, New York. And we'd like to hear from you on how you deal with grief, or what you have learned from grief. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking about grieving this hour and how we can cope with grief, how we can survive loss, how we can learn from our losses. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're welcoming your stories of loss or your questions about grief as we talk with Elaine Mansfield, author of Leaning Into Love, A Spiritual Journey Through Grief. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Elaine, talk a little bit about what you mean by leaning into love.
Well, I think the big lesson of the whole experience for us was that, for me, was what really matters in life is love and kindness. And Vic took on the practice. He was, you know, pretty blurry-headed a lot of the time. He took on the spiritual practice of kindness, and which was when he was, you know, being really hassled by people because they'd hassle you medically sometimes, and things were difficult and not going well. He just would be kind to everybody, including me. And so my whole family learned a lot about kindness. And in that softening, there was so much love and so much coming together in our community of friends and our sons. And we all started, you know, there's a last photograph taken of us, which was my son took, it was a selfie, but we're all kind of leaning into each other. And you can really feel that, how we're holding each other up.
It's so not just your family, though, right? It's your friends and the whole community.
Yeah, and I think it really went out to the doctors too. I had a couple of long conversations with his oncologist, and I sent his oncologist my book, Leaning Into Love, and he had his staff all read it, and because it show, you know, it's just this sense that if you have if you build a support system around yourself. And then you have that love to lean into. And then also, I knew, you know, my husband also said fairly soon before he died, like in the weeks before he died, he said, I don't know what's going to happen to me, but I know I'll always love you. And that sense of the love that is kind of eternal that we all have going on, and it's there underneath all the time if we pay attention to it. And I felt a great sense of that and a great sense of, for me, people try to run away from their grief, but I needed to turn toward it because there was so much love in the sadness. I was sad because I missed this person I loved. And in order to have the feeling of love and be able to lean into that and feel supported by it, I needed also to accept the grieving part. I leaned into my community and my relationships with my family, and I got a lot. I would reach out and ask, and people would really show up.
Let's go to Mary in Wisconsin Rapids. Hello, Mary.
Hi there. I lost my husband about 9 years ago. I still think about him every day. But one thing that a person told me after he passed away was that grief comes in waves. It hits you like a wave, and you feel like you're drowning, and then it goes away sometimes. So I have told, I'm a nurse practitioner at a cancer center, and I've told many patients that. And I think it really helps because that's how it hit me. And then it's like in the middle of anything, and you're not even thinking about that person, and it hits you. But that's kind of helped me get through that. And if you have to have your family to get through that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
What about the waves, Elaine?
I have that experience too, and that's why I say when you talk to me right now, I seem like my grief is very raw, and when I talk about it in this way, it is fairly, comes to the surface pretty easily. But I don't live my life thinking about Vic all the time. I have a really busy, active new life, and with all kinds of interesting things going on, and so. But then I can sometimes, you know, just come home some evening and just have a huge wave of grief come over me. And I let it roll over me, let myself feel it, and then it kind of, that allows it to dissipate. I don't hold it and try to push it back because I feel like that just makes it stronger. So I try to allow that those waves to come when they come. But I agree that they're not there all the time. And I think that the longer it's been about 6 years for me now, the longer it's been, the less intense that grief is. But that feeling of love for my husband is very, very strong still, and I think it'll always be there. We kind of grew up together, you know?
Yeah. Well, do you still acknowledge your anniversaries and holidays and special dates that you had together?
Not too much. Sometimes by myself, I might, you know, I might just go walk out and to the place where his ashes are. But I don't make a deal out of any of those things. My family does, has for about 5 years now, done what a solstice ritual. So we do something before the busyness of Christmas, where we allow a little space for remembering and also thinking about what we want next in our lives. And also the right, my son got married in 2013,2013, and right before. A couple of days before his wedding was the 5th anniversary of Vic's death, and we did a little family ritual together of just sitting together, remembering him, reading passages, and from the Bible, reading poetry, reading various things that were strong for us, and we kind of made a space for grief, and then we could all have a joyous wedding ritual. So.
Here is an email from Becky in Gutenberg, Iowa. I lost a sister in 2000 from MS and a brother in 2006 from suicide, which was very difficult. In the fall of 2014, I lost the rest of my family within 5 months. Oh, my goodness. I am still stunned by the loss, especially my younger sister. All of a sudden, I am the only member of my family left, and I struggle with being alone. There were times of such darkness, I don't know if I could go on, but each day brought a new dawn. I hold on to being a grandmother, and that my precious grandchildren will remember with joy that, and this is what motivates me to renew my positive spirit. Wow, tremendous loss in such a short period of time. Well, you want to respond to Becky's experience?
Well, this, I say the same as you. It's a tremendous amount of loss in a short period of time. And I know in those situations, I usually tell people to make sure they have plenty of support, either therapeutic support hospice, even if you didn't have anything to do with hospice during an illness, most hospice programs that I know, at least in my area, you can go to hospice bereavement groups indefinitely. And in those groups, you find other people who also have been through things and through rough things, and then you have counselors there. And so I always think that it's just good not to be too isolated. It sounds like she has grandkids, so she's still got the continuing family in that way,
right.
And maybe children. So that's great, and that I would imagine that gives a great sense of continuity. But still, I get that feeling where you're the one standing on the abyss there. Everyone else is gone, and you're standing there alone now in the family. Hard.
Talks. You did when you say good grief, the name of your TEDx talk. What was good about it?
Well, I don't wish it on anybody. But so it's good in the sense that it's a learning experience. It's a teaching experience. I think that if we open to grief, we also open to a lot of lessons about the importance of being loving and kind to other people, the fact that everyone suffers, that even people who look like they're doing great on the outside, if you just ask a little bit, they probably have some pretty good heartache going on in there. And the kind of universality of mortality and our the sense that we are we're all living here in a kind of tenuous, insecure way if we start thinking about it too seriously or very seriously, which I think is a good idea to do. I think it makes us better people, more patient, more understanding about what matters and what doesn't.
You mentioned the new life and exciting things that you have going on right now. How do you create that new life and move on from the old one?
I'd say almost immediately after Vic's death, I had the feeling that I wanted to do something for somebody else. I just didn't want to sit and stew in my grief all the time. So I tried a couple of different things, and they didn't feel quite right. And then I went to the local hospice where we hadn't been involved at all because he was in another medical system and was the hospice we used was further away. But so I went to my local hospice and I thought maybe I'd garden or something like that. And instead they asked me if I would work in the office. So about 10 months after Vic died, I started going into the local hospice and working there and getting to know the people who work there and getting to know the whole place and finding that for me it was extremely comforting to be around people who don't love death but know how to handle it, aren't surprised by it, and aren't surprised if you're sad about things and welcome your feelings. So that was very important to me. And then over a period of time, I got more involved with hospice and started, and then I was asked to lead bereavement groups, and I was, you know, doing other bereavement work. And so that's been really important. Also, I started writing my experience, and that, I've always been a writer, and while my husband was ill, I kept journals the whole time because I didn't want to forget what was going on. I wanted to remember, and I knew that there was so much emotional chaos sometimes and a sense of crisis sometimes that I would forget. So sometimes even at the end of the day, I would do something as brief as spend 10 minutes and just make a list of what had happened that day. You know, the ambulance ride, the arrival at the emergency room, blah, 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 that kind of stuff. But I wanted to know, and I also noted my own emotional responses to stuff. And especially if I was angry, I wrote it in my journal. I wrote about that and expressed my anger there. So I had all those notes, and I think I felt the need to start putting some of these things into a form, into a story form, as almost a way to digest and objectify. And then after a period of a few years of doing that, of writing about this one or two stories a week, I started realizing I had the bones of a book. I had a lot to go, a lot to do, because it was more like short stories. But the whole process of writing as a healing ritual became, so I'm a writer now. I mean, I really have learned a huge amount and taken it very seriously the last 3 or 4 years. That's my new life. And now I'm doing more things, speaking and, you know, giving talks. Here I am giving a radio interview. All that is very new for me. I was a nutritionist and an exercise counselor before. So this is a very new life for me.
Yes.
And I know that I wouldn't have done it if he were still alive. So there was some transition that came because of his death. I wouldn't want that transition, but here it is.
Right. Let's take a call from Mo in Madison. Hello, Mo.
Hello, good morning. My story is I lost two first cousins who I grew up with, and also a cousin, first cousin's husband, who are about my vintage. Vintage meaning my similar age as mine, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I grew up with these people, and some of them, one cousin who passed away recently, was playing tennis regularly. And he was very healthy. All of a sudden, we hear that his heart, aorta or something, busted, and he passed away within a couple of hours of pain and bleeding. And
and I'm sorry, Mo. I'm very sorry for your loss. But is there?
Yes. Yeah. How do I? This all this keeps me grieving because I kind of the last cousin that I was lost in California. He was my inspiration. He was my protege.
Yeah.
And I grieve about it. How do I cope up with it? Everybody has to go one day, but I talked to his wife. She's also my cousin. Cousins can marry in India. And now I grieve more than her, looks
yeah,
like.
Yeah, I'm so sorry. So it sounds like Mo is also... he's grieving and experiencing some fear, Elaine.
Yeah, I think I mean, firstly, I always think that it's a good idea to get help, to go to your local. A good place to start is your local hospice organization to find bereavement groups or bereavement counselors. At my hospice organization, there's 13 months of free counseling available. So the various things are available, but also they'll know the resources in your area. And I think it's really helpful to talk to others who've been through these things or know more about. Sudden loss is a very shocking experience. I also think that when you have someone who inspired you in that way, and that it's important to take that inspiration into yourself. Just this morning, in response to something I'd written, a woman told me that her husband used to tell her every morning, "Good morning, beautiful." And I said, and she's just, you know, really distraught. It hasn't been long since her husband died. I told her, I think every morning you should go stand in the mirror or stand in front of the mirror and say to yourself, "Good morning, beautiful."
Oh.
Because there's this thing of turning the love that that person or the inspiration that that person gave you and finding it within yourself.
I love that. We're going to talk about some survival tips for life after loss coming up, and welcome more of your thoughts and questions about dealing with grief and what we can learn from grief. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest, Elaine Mansfield, is a facilitator for bereavement support groups for people who have lost spouses or partners. She is the author of Leaning Into Love, A Spiritual Journey Through Grief. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking about grieving this hour and how we can cope and learn from our grief or grow from our grief. We welcome your stories of loss or questions about grief as we talk with a guest author who lost her husband of 40 years to lymphoma. She is taking us through her journey and describing how leaning into love helped her. She is the author of Leaning Into Love, A Spiritual Journey Through Grief. She also gave a TEDx talk recently, Good Grief, What I Learned from Loss, that is posted on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. She is also a facilitator for bereavement support groups. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Ray and Rhinelander is with us now. Hello, Ray.
Hi. I want to thank your guest for everything that she's doing with all this. All of us have been touched personally one way or another with cancer, and I really appreciate her being brave enough to come out and just say, hey, this is the way it is. This is what I went through, and this is what I'm trying to do. That's really important. My question is I don't know if you want to talk about this in this moment, but I would respect that. When you were dealing with your husband's cancer and the grief of what you went through, I can't imagine the double grief you went through of losing him, seeing him, you know, wither away, so to speak, and him losing himself and the grief of all that. How did you handle that? Is there anything you can tell people who are presently going through that if you want to address that? And I'll listen off there. And thank you again.
Thanks. I don't mind talking about anything as long as you don't mind my feelings. Mm-hmm. I found myself quite heroic at that time, and I think many people do. You're just up against it, and you're seeing this person you love so much suffering, and you want to help them, and you come through. There were other times, which I write about in my book, where I lost my empathy and my patience a few times, and that didn't happen a lot, but I was very honest about it in the book, because I think that also happens as a caregiver. You just feel like you're drowning in the other person's grief and loss and pain. And we would joke sometimes. I had said to my husband, this is what you always wanted, our whole world to be circled around you. And we would laugh. And we always made jokes right to the end. But somehow I think I rose to the occasion 98% of the time. And when I didn't, I rose to the occasion in a half an hour. And then after his death, I was pretty traumatized. There were a lot of images in my mind that just kept going through and through. Some of the things, he'd had a night of where he had 12 cardiac arrests. He'd never had any heart problems whatsoever, but, you know, chemotherapy can do that to you. And then they gave him a medicine, and he started reacting. So I watched him being resuscitated. I was not at the hospital the minute they were first. When they intubated him, I might have said no, but they did. They had done that before I walked in. I was out just driving his mother home. And so that scene just kept going in my head a lot. And I had to work with it. And I wrote about it. I worked with it in therapy to just try to digest what had happened, and also to experience that at the time of crisis, a lot of my friends came and they sat around the outside of the room in the IR, the ER. They sat around the outside of the room within the room, which was amazing. They let that the hospital let them, and they sat on the floor and just quietly. I say they were meditating. They were just quietly praying and having about 15 people in that room. It was a large room sitting around on the floor. Gave me so much strength. And then later, when I would focus on the trauma, I would also try to remember all that support I had felt by those people. So there's often another perspective you can take, but you need help to find it sometimes.
Yeah. When Vic died, I remember reading that you, when you walked out of the facility with your son, I believe, you...
Yeah.
You didn't, you were, how do I put this? You didn't want to see him suffer anymore. There was a certain relief that he had passed?
There was. Yeah. I mean, about 3 or 4 days before he died, he said to me, he was really losing it. And he said to me, I feel like I'm going to go to sleep and never wake up. And I told him, I think that that's a good thing. I really knew. And he knew, too, that the only way out of suffering for him at that point was to die. And so I think that there's although you have to watch someone suffer, there is some kind of relief that can come if you see that there's no other choice but death. It feels like the best choice. And so I felt that in his dying process. It was very peaceful. I felt it after his death. That there was a sense of great sorrow, but also relief.
Yeah. Let's take another call from Jeanette in Niagara. Hello, Jeanette.
Good morning. I just wanted to talk about the difference in the way that different people experience the funeral process itself and how that has impacted my family. My family of origin handles things very, very staunchly. It's very... very reverently. It's very old-fashioned. You know, you've got the viewing, and I have just found that to be very painful and truthfully not really healing. My husband's family lost his brother a few years back, And I was struck by irreverency of how they addressed it, which sounds bad, but we all got together and had a party and talked about, you know, the wonderful things about David's life, and we laughed and we cried, and honestly, I think it has been so much more healing. My family practically does not talk about someone after they've passed at all. And when they do, it's always talking about the last moment.
And
my husband's family always celebrates the life. And I guess
I love
the
it.
Thing that's exciting to me is when I think about David, I think about the stupid, silly things he did that made our lives brighter.
Yeah.
And he's still alive in my memory, whereas the people from my family are dead. I just wanted to mention that. I don't know if that helps anyone, but I, again, it seemed odd to me, but it is wonderful.
I'm glad you brought this up, Elaine.
Me too.
Yeah, well, and that is, I mean, it makes a difference on that memorial or funeral process on perhaps how you can remember and or cope.
We really celebrated Vic's life a number of times, and certainly at the memorial service, although we'd been to a memorial service about a few months before he died, and he leaned over to me and said, "Don't let them make me sound like an angel."
Yeah.
And I said, "Uh-oh, he's sounding a little angelic here." But then a wonderful, our friend, who's also our doctor, told great stories about when we'd been in India together and really made everyone laugh. And Vic was he had a great sense of humor, and that part really came in. And my sons at his memorial service, which was kind of in this, at this, center, that's in the country, they did what they called a chainsaw salute, because Vic was kind of a woodsman, and he cut our firewood, only cutting sick trees and things. But here's my sons and a couple of other kids are out starting, they're running chainsaws, you know, just to like send a message up, you know, and to laugh. And there was a lot of humor, in all aspects of burying him and remembering him. And I'd say we remember the positive things a lot. And the loss was very strong in the beginning, but also the gratitude and love and appreciation for his sense of humor and the mark he made on our lives and the mark he made in life for others, for his students. All those things were really important. And I think it's a great thing when people have a memorial service that's so personal and brings in those things. When my dad died, the man who did the service didn't even know my dad, you know, so it was so impersonal. It's terribly sad and distant. So I like what your husband's family does.
Yeah, that was so talk on how, what helped you, survive life after Vic's loss? The list that of 30 things that we can do to survive following a loss.
Yeah. Did you say 30?
What, wasn't it 30?
Did you say 30 or just things we can do?
Don't say all 30, no, but from that list, tell us some of the things that helped you or what you think we should be able to do.
Oh, okay. Ritual helped me tremendously. That was so important to me, and I had no idea it would be. You know, just putting a flower in front of a photograph, nothing fancy. My own personal little ritual, things people do all the time. The other thing, it helped me tremendously to be in nature. When I felt like the grief was very hard and kind of like I was drowning, this in the early days, I would just go outside. So in the first summer after he died, I was self-employed. So I didn't take clients, and I would walk sometimes three times a day. I would just keep being outside, because somehow being in nature and especially around big trees, I figured they'd seen a lot. They'd seen a lot of human coming and going, and nature made me feel like we were all just a natural part of the process of living and dying, and made me feel like this is not so unusual. This is just This is just the process of life. And so nature helped me tremendously. It helped me to take care of myself, to exercise. So I did that, going outside and exercising, work together. It helped me to be with friends. It also helped me just as much to have solitude and to have plenty of time where I could just sink into being as sad as I needed to be. Various people helped me, friends helped me who were willing to really listen. I always think that nobody needs to know any answers, but if you have friends or if you are a friend who can just listen to someone else's story and sadness, it's very healing to be able to tell your story. Writing is very healing.
Well, is there, based on your experience, how can we help loved ones who are grieving?
Well, I think that thing that I just said, which is to listen, to be, there are a lot of lists about what you shouldn't say to someone who's grieving. And I think it's a good idea to read those lists if you've got someone and you're not sure what to say, because it's very hard to hear things like he's in a better, she's in a better place, or this was meant to be, or you'll look back and think this was good, this is a good, the right thing. And those kinds of things are not very helpful, and they are jarring and they're upsetting. Although I knew some people take a lot of offense, I knew that people were trying to reach out to me, so I didn't feel offended by anything like that. But I think that the main thing is to listen, to offer very specific things, not just say, call me if you need me, but instead say, I'll call somebody and say, I made a pot of soup. Would you like to have a quart of soup? And bring it over to them and have lunch with them. Or people, because they knew I liked to walk, they would call and say, I'd like to come and walk with you. Or let's meet in town and have tea. Or that, I think the main thing is not to say anything. No problem solving needs to be done, but just to listen and to be a sounding board for someone, and also just to keep showing up and not forget. The people who remembered and sent me an email or a card or called me on the phone a year or two after he died on the anniversary of his death, I was really moved by that, that they remembered.
Yeah. So is there any way to prepare in advance for hard losses in our lives?
Well, I don't know. I think I was about as prepared as anybody can be. Frankly, I had years of meditation practice, years of studying world philosophies and having a pretty broad perspective of what this life is about. And lots of psychological work, a relationship that I didn't have any unfinished business. I was very lucky that way with my husband. I didn't have any big messes left behind. I was very lucky in that way.
Yeah, and I'm afraid we're running out of time, Elaine.
Okay.
It's been very, very nice talking to you. Thank you so much for being with us.
Yeah.
Elaine Mansfield is author of Leaning Into Love, A Spiritual Journey Throughout Grief. Thanks to Christy Taylor and to Cynthia Schuster for producing and directing this program. Thank you for listening. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.